County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month for free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Derbyshire County Cricket Club all-rounder Lewis Rees. So Lewis, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, another day in the office. Yeah, I loved it. Been at training. It's all gearing up for the new season. I think we're in the low 40s now until the county season starts. So, yeah, all fully down on the throttle and ready to get going.
Well, that'll be good news for the Derbyshire fans out there. And in terms of your progress over the winter, Lewis, because as some people will know, last season, unfortunately, ruled out for the year as a result of an injury. How's the rehabilitation process been going in these past few months?
Yeah, it's been slow going. As you say, a double operation's, it's never ideal. It's just been a case of trying to sort of tick boxes and get targets sort of out the way as you go. So the shoulder's going really well. Signed off now, so fingers crossed. It's just a case of, you know, fully rehabbing it, keeping it strong. And away we go. The knee, obviously, a little bit further back than that, just because of, obviously, I've had to spread the ops out just so I can walk around on crutches and all the rest of it. I think I have a consultation with the consultant just before we go off on pre-season. So hopefully then get a green light to sort of stepping things up in terms of running and all the rest of it. At the minute it's going well. It's I'm lucky. I've got some good people behind me helping me out, and fingers crossed. Yeah, as I say, it should be hopefully a smooth return to playing.
Fingers crossed, Lewis. Fingers crossed. I know the Derbyshire fans out there as well will eagerly be anticipating your return for the Falcons in this year's county season. But Lewis, before we talk about Derbyshire and we get into the main course of today's episode, which we'll revolve around the East Midlands County. We'll have a little chat about Mickey Arthur as well as the podcast progresses, and then finish off things with a nice cheeky round of TCCP teammates. Before we get into all that good stuff, I just want to transport you all the way back to the origins of your cricketing journey, if I may. So, Lewis, what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this magnificent game?
It would have been watching my dad. So I lived in Somerset at the time. It was me, my two brothers and my sister. I suppose my dad used to play Saturday afternoon cricket. We went down and watched, never really watched as a little kid. You wanted to be running around and playing yourself. So I think that was my first sort of taste was being around when my dad was playing. We played at the side. And then pretty much from there, I've been hooked. Used to love actually going down and watching, and, you know, being in a group of three lads growing up, we were always quite competitive with each other, and always sort of, we always wanted to bat, we wanted to bowl, and you know, you get those competitive juices going. And it was only when I moved up to Lancashire when I was probably about six that I started going into a club and started my playing day, started actually properly playing at a local club then. I suppose my dad's been the main inspiration for starting cricket.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis, it's a nice journey into the game. Very family orientated, very community orientated as well. Always a lovely path into the game of cricket in those most formative of years. And you mentioned there about playing club cricket. What was your first ever club?
My first ever club was Vernon Carris Cricket Club. unbelievable junior program at the time. They really, really were. Yeah, I had a couple of really good coaches there, and you know, that was pretty much me for the next, you know, probably 8 years. Sort of always down at the club, always training with them, and just loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic here. It really is. And yeah, it's always nice. We always ask that on the podcast because we want to know where, you know, the guest journey has started, because everybody in professional cricket starts with club cricket. You go up through the age groups, you might have your trials, your second 11, first 11, international beyond that. It all starts somewhere. So thank you very much for that, Lewis. And of course, shout out to Vernon Carris Cricket Club. But in those early years, you mentioned already your dad, and I'm guessing he was a massive influence, as were your brothers, clearly quite cricket crazy. But in terms of the professional game, either at the domestic or the international level, Lewis, did you have any kind of influences, any idols, any role models that you tried to emulate your game off of in those most formative of years, per se?
In terms of role models, yeah, I had a few. So Brian Lara was my first sort of, I suppose, role model. You know, I used to love watching him bat. I used to, you know, sit there with my dad and watch him on TV and stuff like that. And yeah, he was my first out-and-out role model that I loved. Obviously, if I could try and emulate him, great. But let's be fair, I'd look nothing like Brian Lara when I play cricket. But yeah, he was my first role model. And then it would have been the three of Flintoff, Brett Lee and A.B. de Villiers. They've been sort of my three when I've played that just absolutely love watching. They were, didn't matter who they played against, I'd be flicking the TV on and watching them and just absolutely loved it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis, I can't argue with those particular choices. And before we talk about those latter three, you have brought up the prince himself, Brian Charles Lara, obviously an absolute titan here in Shakespeare's County. That 1994 season for Warwickshire was absolutely ridiculous. Over 2,000 runs scored with an average of 89. That's just superhuman from the Prince from Trinidad and Tobago. Lewis, if you could choose one, just one, and this is going to be a tough question, of Brian Charles Lara's knocks, which you could relive ball by ball, which one would you choose and why?
I think you can't look past his 400, to be fair. Like, I think going, it's quite an easy one to sort of pick, the fact that he was going through a bit of a lean trot, and it was just the fact that everyone was writing him off, saying, nah, he's past it, he's over it. And obviously, you know, he came in there, he had a lot of media stuff about him and his captaincy and all the rest of it. And the way, just going out there and, you know, scoring 400 at all is ridiculous, but the manner he did, he just tore England apart. And you know, he's had obviously hundreds in Australia and stuff like that where you've just stood and gone wow. But yeah, the 400 where he was literally just playing, he just, wherever he wanted to hit it, he hit it. And you just sit there and you look at it and you go, you know what, this is ridiculous. You're probably never going to see this again in test match cricket. For someone to do it as fluently as he did it, he's, as I say, he's definitely the most attractive player. Him and A.B. de Villiers for me have been the most attractive players that I've ever witnessed. I know people say like Viv Richards and things like this, but you know, in my time watching Brian Lara and A.B. de Villiers, I just stood there and I was like, some of the things they're doing is just ridiculous. And they make the game look like it's using a tennis ball in the back garden. And that's pretty much the best way to describe it, is they do things that people could only dream of.
And that's how you can tell that they are the best of the best. When you make a sport like cricket look so easy, look so fluent, so elegant, so classy, so refined, great choice. Obviously, I'm not going to argue with Brian Charles Lara. Also, Lewis, you won't know this, but I'm an RCB fan in the IPL. Okay. So Abraham Benjamin de Villiers, I absolutely love him. A little bit of a story. I know this is a bit off topic, but in 2019, I went down for the Cheltenham Cricket Festival, Gloucestershire versus Middlesex. Yeah. For basically the sole purpose of seeing A.B. de Villiers. That's why I got the tickets. And unfortunately, I think it was the night before, there was a game at Lord's and he injured his right hand on a high catch. No. So I never got to see him.
That's heartbreaking. I must admit, I'd be heartbroken with that. I've always hoped that along the way that we'd either play Middlesex or you know, playing a franchise league with him or something like that, where you could just sit there, either have a drink with him, have a chat with him, shake his hand. I was just like, you know what, I could literally watch him all day. You know, from the minute he came on international cricket, I just looked at him and I thought, there's something about you. Obviously, it was a slow start for him. But yeah, it soon flourished into, you know, arguably one of the best 360 players to have walked the planet.
Absolutely. I still remember in 2012 and 2013, he did this in back-to-back years in the IPL against Deccan Chargers and Sunrisers Hyderabad. He took Dale Steyn for 24-plus runs in an over. This is prime Dale Steyn, a man with 439 test wickets, bowling 94-mile-an-hour rockets. It was ludicrous. And it's funny you mentioned there, actually, about wanting to meet AB de Villiers. That was my second question, actually, the follow-up of the Brian Lara question. Between Andrew Flintoff, Brett Lee, a.k.a. Binger, and AB de Villiers, Mr. 360, if you could have a one-hour-long chat, almost like a podcast, with one of those players, who would you choose and why?
See, out of those three, I count one of them out already because, believe it or not, I've actually captained him, Freddie, when he came back and played his second stint. So I spent a bit of time with Fred and absolutely loved having him in the dressing room. Like, he was such a great bloke when he came in, and, you know, just, yes, it was the back end of his career, and obviously he was still struggling with his body and things like that. But to have him there was unbelievable. I think we were all as nervous as each other. I think he was just as nervous being in the dressing room as what we were having him there, thinking, this boy's like an Ashes winner. He's, you know, one of England's great all-rounders, and he's sharing a dressing room in a second team game. So, yeah, I'll have to count him out, unfortunately, as much as I'd still love having a chat with him now. But I reckon it would be... I'd probably go for AB de Villiers quite comfortably as well, just to pick his brains. And as I say, I could be his little GoPro for the day, watching him play tennis or golf or, you know, or cricket, anything like that. Seems to make everything look easy, which annoying for us immortals, but, you know, it's great to see. And as I say, it will be, you know, obviously it's a shame that we're not watching him on the international stage and things like that anymore, but, you know, he's left his mark on cricket, which is what pretty much every cricketer wants to do, is leave a mark on the game, and he's certainly done that.
He most certainly has. To be honest, I could not have articulated that much better myself. Just a legend. All of them are legends. And it's funny, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Of course, Freddie Flintoff, he came back, didn't he, in 2014. And yeah, the one moment I can think of that second spell, the return of the king, as it's known up in Lancashire, was 2014 Blast Finals Day. Getting out Ian Bell, my favourite ever cricketer, obviously, on the Dale support in Warwickshire. But that was an iconic moment, wasn't it? Freddie Flintoff doing that under the Sky Sports cameras, under the lights at Edgbaston. What a legend.
It was just made for him. Absolutely made for him. And you couldn't help, you know, it's a massively brave thing that he did. You know, knowing that his body's not as it was. And to come out and do that, it's been phenomenal. And as I say, he's the journey that he's been on, even after cricket and that, you can see what a brave man he is. And I've got nothing but respect for him. Like, even, as I say, you always fear when someone's played that high and they've been that good, they've been in the spotlight, how they're going to be when they're just with the immortal cricketers and that sort of thing. But he was honestly just a great, great bloke. And yeah, he was a pleasure to have around. And as I say, everyone was chuffed for him. Everyone that was associated with the county, and I'm sure pretty much nationwide, I'm pretty sure Ian Bell wouldn't have been too upset that Fred came in and did that. You know, it was just a great moment. And, you know, he nearly won it with a bat as well, which was, you know, it was great to see. But that's Freddie. He can do anything. When everyone's wrote him off, he can still come back and win a game.
Yeah, he almost did, didn't he? But fortunately for us as Warwickshire fans, Christopher Roger Wokes, the Warwickshire Wizard, came to our aid at the time of need. So... What a final, what a moment in finals day history as well. You always see that on the Sky Sports top 10 countdowns of finals day moments, and it deserves to be up there, easily top three. It's just so iconic. Obviously, at the time, I wasn't celebrating. Far from it. I was absolutely gutted. I was gutted at the time, but fortunately, Laurie Evans came and saved us. And then, of course, the wizard at the end. Great game of cricket. We might actually touch upon that, actually, later on in the conversation, Lewis. But before we talk about Lancs and we talk about Derbyshire, there was one other professional team that you played for, a team which unfortunately no longer exists. They folded in 2018. But the Unicorns, who some people who are news accounts cricket might not even know about. So, Lewis, could you just explain what the Unicorns were and kind of what service they provided for minor county cricketers and almost fringe players who wanted to get a proper go in the county circuit?
Yeah, so they gave me my first professional game, I suppose, in terms of, you know, first team stuff in the back then was what the Pro 40 was. And they, you know, they were made up of people all around the country, as you say, minor counties. It could be lads that have just left the game and they're trying to find their way back in. You know, obviously you don't get paid for it. It wasn't like that sort of thing. It was, I suppose, trying to, almost like a shop window, if you will. If you put in good performances, then there's every chance that, you know, county's going to want to look at you, and it either leads to a trial or, I suppose, an instant contract if they like what they saw. And it was just a way to, I suppose, to upskill yourself against, you know, the best players in the country at that point. And we did a bit of damage along the way. We beat a couple of county tides, and, you know, it was brilliant. It really was brilliant. I loved it for 2 years. It was absolutely brilliant. And it was a shame to see it fold, because the Unicorns and the university scheme, I can't speak highly of enough. And they're some of the reasons why I'm a professional today, is because of those two.
Exactly. And it's not just yourself, Lewis. It's plenty of cricketers. I can think another one straight off the top of my head, Josh Poisden. He played for the Unicorns as well, went on to play for Warwickshire, had a pretty good career for the Bear and Ragged staff as well. It was a really quite interesting and unique team. And something else I loved about the Unicorns was that they played across the country in all these beautiful outgrounds. And that relates beautifully to a question that I just had to ask. What was your favourite ground to play at for the Unicorns? Because they played at two in particular. I'll always remember them, iconic grounds. Truro in Cornwall. They played there in 2013. I know you weren't there at the time, so technically that might not count. But the other one, Wormsley, which is absolutely picture perfect in Buckinghamshire. What would you say was the best Unicorns ground from your personal perspective?
Yeah, option B there. Wormsley was just a brilliant, brilliant ground. Like, loved it. Yeah, it was a great place to play. As you say, very iconic. There wasn't a blade of grass out of place. Great atmosphere, you know, that they put on marquees and stuff like that. And it just made it such a intimate sort of ground where, you know, it's not like a massive pavilion where you hid away from all the spectators and that. So it was all very intimate, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And, you know, I was lucky enough that my dad followed me around and watched, and he loved going. He said it was a great viewing ground. And yeah, unfortunately, it's probably a ground that I've been hit for the biggest six of my life on, thanks to Martin Guptill. But yeah, it was, yeah, one of those grounds that it's just a pleasure to play at.
It is indeed. And actually, funnily enough, a story that some listeners might not know, our Welsh co-host, Lucy Rees, she's not here tonight, as you can tell, otherwise you would have heard her voice by now. But in the summer, actually, of 2021, she was the scorer for the PCA Legends game at Wormsley. So an interesting piece of TCCP trivia for the listeners out there. But it is an absolutely picture-perfect ground. It's beautiful. As you said, no blade of grass is out of place. I mean, we need to see more cricket there, to be honest. It's absolutely gorgeous. And Lewis, just one final question about the Unicorns, because I've been asked this quite a lot. If it was financially viable, and it is a big if because they folded, but if the Unicorns could come back in some way, shape or form, would you be in favour of that?
100%, without even question. So, as I mentioned, the uni scheme and the Unicorn scheme, brilliant. And yeah, I think it is such a shame to see both of them sort of struggling at the minute. You know, look around, especially the uni stuff, look around how many cricketers have been involved in the uni scheme. It's scary, the numbers. And to see it sort of going down the path it is now, it is gut-wrenching, really. Both the Unicorns and the uni side, like, as I say, like Lewis Hill and things like that, they were in my team in the Unicorns. That they've gone on playing county cricket and made a decent career for themselves. It's those sort of people it's helped, and it's, you know, allowed people to keep chasing their dreams for a bit longer, rather than being told when you're 18 or whatever, actually, you know what, sorry, you're not good enough. And, you know, now you'll find more people slipping through the net because they'll have to go and get jobs, and they probably won't be able to, as I say, chase that dream a little bit longer just to push through that barrier.
Yeah, it's a massive shame, to be honest. But again, it was due to lack of financial capabilities, really. The minor counties, the National County Cricket Association, basically said they weren't financially viable anymore. They tried, but in 2018, unfortunately, the Unicorns had to fold. But I think it goes without saying, to be honest, I'd love to see them back one day, because, Lewis, you've hit the nail on the head perfectly there. It was almost like a second chance. It was the shop window team. It was a team where, let's say you hadn't quite established yourself as a county professional, or if you're really trying hard in minor county cricket to get that chance in the first place, that was a great opportunity to do exactly that and just put your name in the hat, just make your name a little bit more wider known across the county circuit. So fingers crossed it returns one day. I would absolutely love to see that, along with an FA Cup style cricket competition with the national counties.
I've said this for a while now. I think it'd be brilliant, even if it's like the one day stuff, you know, do that as an FA Cup style. It'd be great to see. And I reckon you'd attract a whole different style of cricket fan.
100%. You would, wouldn't you? Because, well, again, with the FA Cup this season, I was going to say this summer, it was actually during the winter, I suppose, for Stratford Town. We had like 2,000 people showing up for Stratford versus Shrewsbury. You just think about the local clubs. Let's say you had the national counties there involved, and maybe the best of the best local village sides from across the country. It'd be incredible, wouldn't it? Imagine if your side, like your real local village team, made it to Lords or Edgbaston or Old Trafford, wherever they held the final. It'd be remarkable, wouldn't it? That'd be absolutely class.
It would. It'd be brilliant. And as I say, even for those blokes, you know, that aren't yet professional cricketers, or, you know, they don't want to be professional cricketers, to have the chance to play against a professional team, or to play at a Lords or an Edgbaston or an Old Trafford or whatever it may be, you know, it may just help them stay in cricket a bit longer. And again, it just brings the cricket community together, especially after the last, you know, 18, 24 months of what's gone on. I think it's perfect timing to try and get everyone together and try and sort of, I suppose, reignite cricket around the country.
100%. And to be honest, I echo that. If there's a way to make it logistically feasible, if we can have an FA Cup style cricket competition, I'll be there every single week. I'd absolutely love that. I'd travel up and down the country for that, watching, I don't know, Shropshire take on Durham. That'd be an interesting fixture. Cornwall taking on Middlesex. Surrey taking on Staffordshire. It'd be brilliant. So fingers crossed something like that can happen. It might be fanciful thinking for the time being, but we keep our fingers crossed here at the County Cricket Podcast. It would be absolutely incredible. And Lewis, one of the grounds we mentioned there, Emirates Old Trafford, as it's known, one of the most iconic venues in English and Welsh cricket. You had the privilege of playing there for a number of years in your professional career. What were your first impressions, first and foremost, of Lancashire County Cricket Club, considering that you'd gone from the Unicorns, which completely different, you weren't getting paid, for example, during your time there? What were your first kind of impressions, what were your first kind of opinions and thoughts and views on Lancashire as a cricket club?
Obviously, Lancashire's been pretty much my home county in terms of cricket-wise. It's where I've played most of my cricket, going through the age groups and all the rest of it. But then at 18, not to get given a contract and get told to look elsewhere, that allowed me to have the opportunity to play for the Unicorns, etc. Obviously, the ground's changed completely since I first started. You know, the square's been turned around. Now got the big stands, the point buildings, the media centre, everything like that's all been added on and changed. So the ground's changed completely. So yeah, obviously it's an incredible venue now. Incredible. Like, you look at it and obviously there's still work to be undertaken on it, which is the scary thing. Cause it's one of the best grounds in the world. You know, you just have to look at the player media building to have a swimming pool in there, you know, a gym and stuff like that. You just think, you know what, that's second to none. And yeah, I was lucky enough to play there for a number of years and loved it. And that was where my first sort of county championship breakthrough came into fruition. And yeah, it's a special ground, and it always feels weird going back there now, even, you know, this coming into our sixth season away from it. It still feels weird now coming back to it. But yeah, you know, it's a ground that when you step out in the middle, you get those butterflies. You know, there's only certain grounds in the world that you get that, but it's definitely one. And, you know, you always go back to familiar faces that are still there than when you were there, and, you know, both opposition and people that work on the ground. And it's where I've grown up is that sort of area of England. And, you know, it's a venue that's very much a leader in terms of facilities, and, you know, it's got massive history, and it's, you know, one of English's biggest clubs currently. And you can only say nice things about the ground and the way they've done it. And fingers crossed, when it's complete, it will just be a complete spectacle for everyone to come and watch and enjoy both international cricket and county cricket.
Absolutely. And again, I can't relate to the walking out into the middle. I don't think I ever will, to be completely honest. Fortunately, county cricket isn't that desperate, and I hope that Warwickshire are never that desperate to recall my services. But obviously, having had the fan experience, in particular in the party stand at Old Trafford, that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's not quite the Eric Holley stand. That's the reason why I went in there, because you have to compare the two. It's not quite the Eric Holley stand, which is completely unique in cricket. And again, that has to be on every single cricket badger's bucket list, to try and survive a night in the Holley stand at Edgbaston on a Friday evening. That's interesting, to say the least. But Old Trafford, as you said, steeped in history, tradition. You can just sense it's a really special cricketing venue, and one which is iconic and revered here in this country. And in 2013, Lewis, as you rightfully mentioned, you made your first team debut for Lancashire in that season in the county championship in what was quite a remarkable game down in Chelmsford. What can you remember from that fateful game?
I remember a lot of it, to be fair. It's it's one of the most peculiar games I've still been a part of today. You know, I've obviously gone down and been told I'm going to play. I was half injured at the time. I was hobbling around. I was playing football in a uni warm-up a couple of weeks beforehand, and someone took me out. So I was there nursing a bad knee and all the rest of it. And I was like, oh, just sort of grin and bear it, crack on, just make sure you're able to play. And then, yeah, I watched one of the best innings I've seen in county cricket still, is Simon Cattage just again making the game look easy. Just a class apart. I faced one of the most disgusting county bowlers I've faced in Dave Masters with a new ball, under lights as well. Always nice making your debut under lights. So yeah, it was just a surreal game to bowl them out for 21, and you know, you saw, I think most of them were LBs. Carl Hogan and Glenn Chappell both got fired a pop in the second innings, and it was just unbelievable to see. I stood at fine leg and mid off, and I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I've not seen this. It's not like the ball's doing everything. It was just, something started happening and just kept happening. And then all of a sudden, within, you know, an hour or an hour and a half, whatever, off the field, game one. And I was just like, Jesus. I wouldn't mind this being every game. Unfortunately, it hasn't been the case throughout my career. But yeah, it was a special start to it. You know, just being a part of that game, winning your first game is massively important. But yeah, you just have fond memories of where it all started, I suppose.
I can imagine they're very, very fond memories indeed, because I'm just looking at the stats from that. An innings and 105-run victory against Essex. That in itself is very impressive, considering how Essex have gone on to become real Red Bull titans in county cricket in the years that followed. Essex being bowled out for 20 runs within 15 overs. Glenn Chappell, listen to these bowling figures, listeners. 5 for 9. Kyle Hogg, a former guest here on TCCP, 4 for 11. And then Chappell ran out James Foster for 4 runs. So Glenn Chappell and Kyle Hogg basically dismissed the entire team in that particular innings, which is absolutely staggering. And Lewis, in terms of from a personal perspective, can you remember your exact score from that game? And of course, who dismissed you?
So I know who dismissed me. I got caught second slip to Graham Napier, going for a big drive. I got a bit giddy. I've just flicked him off my legs and pulled him. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to have a bit of you here. And then he put me in my place pretty quickly. So I think I got 23, I think.
Close.
Go on.
24.
Well, we'll take that. We'll round it up.
Extra, but they all count.
So, yeah, no, it was a grey day under lights, facing Masters. And I suppose you have that carefree attitude, don't you, when you first play? There's no baggage behind you. There's nothing that's gone wrong or right. It's just get on your merry way. And absolutely loved it. Peter Moores made me feel at home straight away. He's someone that I speak very highly of. He's still one of the best coaches I've had the pleasure of working with. And he was very good to me. He gave me my chance and he backed me. And yeah, it was phenomenal. And then, as I said, we went on to win the Div 2 County Championship. We finished unbeaten. It was just the perfect first season, really, for me.
I was about to say, yeah, not the worst debut season for Lancs at all. In terms of your stats in that season as well, very, very impressive. Third leading run scorer for Lancs in 2013, behind only Simon Katic and Ashwell Prince, who just tore up the circuit, let's be honest. 1,000-plus runs each for them. They were absolutely ridiculous in that season. But in 10 matches, 722 runs of 55.53, which included 8 half-centuries. That's a pretty good debut season. And actually, Lewis, in that vein of questioning, I suppose, in hindsight, would you say that was your standout year for Lancs? Or did another one of the years maybe top that in the years that followed?
No, for Lancs, it was definitely a standout year. Things changed pretty quickly for a number of reasons. Obviously, you get found out a little bit. You know, so obviously the next season I found tough going into Division 1 as well. You know, when you start slowly, it's different when you're playing in April to when I started, when it was, I think most of it was July, August, September back then. You know, whereas now you play a lot of the stuff at the start of the season and then you a lot of it at the end. But back then, a lot of them was in July, August, September. So as I say, 10 games in those 3 months, you know, wickets are a bit drier, they're a bit flatter, a bit more conducive to batting. So that was a massive help. But yeah, the following year, starting off in the side in April at Trent Bridge, first game. And it was something that I found tough. Obviously, I suppose when you've had that success that I had and things just sort of snowballed to then be on the receiving end where obviously you come against some of the best county bowlers in the country in April, new conditions that you've ever played in before. I found it quite tough. Peter Moores then soon left. I think he left in our second game against, actually, it was announced at Warwickshire, I think, and that was a game that I think we had snow at one point.
Yes.
In that game. So he announced it then. Change of personnel at the top. Didn't necessarily respond as well to them as I did to Peter Moores. And then as a result of that, I became less in favour. And I wasn't their type of cricketer. And then found it on the back burner then, and I was sort of in and out the side. I found things tough, and unfortunately, personal stuff away from cricket. I was going through a bit of a dark stage there, losing my best friend at university, losing a couple of my grandparents that I was very close to. It all took its toll on me, which meant a couple of quiet years in, especially first team stuff, which then obviously later down the line resulted in a move, and that's when I came to Derby.
This is going to be a very tough question, Lewis, and feel free to answer this however you see fit, but having heard that, and obviously Lancs being your boyhood club, and a club which in that first season you'd had tremendous success with, I've already read out those stats, the promotion, all those fantastic times. In hindsight, do you wish things would have panned out a little bit differently? Because you've spoken so highly of Peter Moores, you've spoken so highly of the club itself, but in those latter years, from what I'm guessing and interpreting from that, it didn't quite work out how you wished it did. Do you wish things had turned out differently at your boyhood club?
Yeah, of course you do. You know, and you always look closer to home before you look elsewhere. And as I say, I was very much someone that just wanted to crack on with things. I got my head down. I've always been someone who's worked extraordinarily hard on both my fitness, my game. Love it is sort of my escape, is training hard. And that's one thing that I know, that when I finish my career, no one can turn around to me and say, oh, you didn't quite work hard enough. I can honestly say that's never been the case. I've never taken things for granted or anything like that. I've always worked as hard as I possibly can at things. Whether it always pays off or not, that's a different story. And sometimes that's out of your control. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned as I've got older is actually to communicate a little bit more, to allow people to know what's going on, which I didn't do then. I didn't perhaps allow and communicate what was going off the field as well, which, you know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, if I got everything right at 23, 24, I'd be surprised. There's not many that do. But yeah, as I say, it's something that you do wish panned out differently. And obviously the start that I had, I was hoping that I could kick on and I was going to be there for the next, you know, 15, 20 years. And, you know, I suppose be a hallmark at the club and you sort of be the mainstay and that sort of thing. But life never goes the way you plan. No matter what you do, it always takes you down weird and wonderful paths. And I know I've been very fortunate with, you know, having five seasons at Derby where it's been a difference. Like, obviously, it's not had the same success, but it's brought out the best in me, and it's brought out, I suppose, opportunities for me to develop both as a person and as a cricketer. And I've had more responsibility, I've had more more opportunity, and with that, I've absolutely loved it. And it's definitely been something that I don't regret. Obviously, I wish I probably perhaps did things a little bit differently, but in terms of my journey along the way, I wouldn't change it. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I know that I can look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day and I say, you know what, I've worked as hard as I possibly can. I've given it everything I've got. And, you know, if someone turns around to me and say, you know what, Lewis, I think your day's done, thanks for that, I can sleep well at night knowing that I've given it everything. I haven't wasted anything. I haven't done anything. I haven't left a stone unturned. Just things didn't work out for whatever reason. But I know that I've worked as hard as I can along the way.
Well, that's the important thing, isn't it? You already mentioned it. That's all you can do. Just put in every single sinew of your being into your craft, into the fitness, into being the best cricketer that you can be. But in addition to that, it's also so important, isn't it, the off-field stuff and being in that right frame of mind. We mentioned this on the podcast all the time, and I understand it's incredibly cliche, but the game is 90% mental, 10% physical. Honestly, it cannot be underestimated just how important the psychological aspects of the game are. And from listening to that passage there, Lewis, at Lancs it seems like the balance wasn't quite right, and it appears as though in the years that followed at Derbyshire, that balance is a little bit more even. Would you agree with that? Would you agree that it's been positive in terms of your personal development as well, I suppose, away from the game? of cricket.
Yeah, I think when you get older as well, you get a bit smarter with that. You know, you become a bit more aware of who you are as a person. You become a bit more at ease with it. I suppose sometimes your priorities shift a little bit. Not in terms that you don't put your cricket first or whatever that may be. It's just a bit, you know, that there's other things to life, as you say, that it's 90% mental, but you try, and I suppose it's able to park it a bit better. So knowing that it's a game of cricket that you love and you want to do well and you'll do everything to do well, but at the end of the day, you're going home to a family that doesn't care if you're a cricketer, don't care if you're a bin man or whatever it may be. It's just they want you to be happy. And I think when you get older, you can see that a bit more. As deep as that is, like that's what means the most to me, is actually, you know, coming home and to people that, you know, they're not bothered how you've done, whether you get 100, a duck, you know, 5 for or 0 for 100 off 10 overs, whatever it may be, like they're not bothered. They're all they want is to see you smiling and happy, and that, you know, that it puts things into context quite quickly. As much as we, you know, we analyze the games and we go through it in our heads, and you know, even if when we watch England, when everyone analyzes them and stuff like that, no one ever goes out there trying to do badly. No one. And that's the thing that I think people have to remember, is sometimes the person that you're up against, they're either better than you, or it's just their day out as well. And people allow their day out, and they're allowed to succeed. And unfortunately, if someone succeeds, the other person usually on the bad end of it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, it's, I think being at Derby and that family orientated club, where I suppose Lancashire is a bit more of an organisation, it suits me a little bit better. Someone who, you know, enjoys having that close knit, having those people that, you know, I'll always have their back and I'll always look after. And I know that they'll do the same to me. I think that's what gets the best out of me.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. And first and foremost, Lewis, very happy to hear that as well. Very, very happy. That makes me incredibly happy to know that you're content at the Inchora Ground in Derby. And obviously, it's a fantastic club. It really is. You know, when people on social media and in the written media as well berate Derbyshire and belittle them and call them a small county and say that, oh, they might as well just cease to exist. They're not producing any England players. They don't win any trophies, this, that, the other. I just think about whether or not those people have actually been to Derby as a club. I wonder if they've actually spoken to any Derbyshire members, because as a club, it's not an organisation. It doesn't have the massive feel of a Surrey or a Lancs or a Warwickshire, but everybody involved at Derbyshire County Cricket Club, the players, the coaches, the backroom staff and the members, care so deeply about this club. That's why they deserve that protection. That's why they deserve to be a first-class county, in my opinion, at least. And some people may disagree with that. But something which is universally recognised in county cricket with Derbyshire as a club is that strong sense of community. It really is a family club. Everyone is so close-knit. It's a great place to go and watch a game of cricket. And Lewis, actually, in terms of the whole, the Ashes fallout, let's be honest, okay, there was a lot of frustration, built up anger, you know, thrown at county cricket in particular, rightly or wrongly so, as a result of England's 4-0 defeat at the hands of the Australians. What would you have to say to the doubters out there of Derbyshire County Cricket Club? What does this club mean to both yourself and, I suppose, the county itself? Just how important of an institution is Derbyshire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's very easy to look at the county system and say, oh, you know, Derbyshire, they never win anything or they don't do anything. But you only have to look back the last few years. They've been to finals day. For the T20 stuff. They finished second in the Bob Willis in 2020. I know it's a shorter thing, but they finished second in a tough group. You know, they've been there and thereabouts for the 2020s for the last 3 or 4 years. Like, you know, quarterfinal 2017, finals day 2019. They've only just marginally missed out in 2018 and things like this. Even last year, you know, we had two games out of COVID. We weren't out of the competition. You know, people are very quick to write it off because of, you know, they haven't won silverware and stuff like that. Derbyshire are building something. Whether people can see it from the outside, it's irrelevant. We know what we're doing. We've got Mickey Arthur in now, international pedigree. He's outlined his vision for the club. He's outlined how he's going to get us there. We've got senior players there that are just great people, and we know where we want to take the club and how we're going to do things as a collective. We've got great coaches, and as I say, things are building, and it may be at a slower pace because we can't bring in these international superstars that are towards the back end of their career, or bring them to the club for massive amounts of money. But what we can control is how we do things internally and how we do it. And as I say, there's a vision there and there's a plan in place and there's things that are building, and people that pay attention to county cricket, in a few years, they'll see that actually it was worth waiting for, and that Derbyshire are actually going the right way with things. And they're going toe-to-toe with the likes of Essex, with the likes of Warwickshire, the likes of Lancashire, these types of teams. And it won't be a one-storied game. It will be, you know, tough fought, hard battle. And, you know, it's going to be... We're excited. We've got it between the teeth after a tough year in Red Bull cricket last year. And it was tough. And we'll be the first ones to put a hand up and say it was disappointing. Again, not a lack of effort or a lack of people trying. It was just... You know, we ended up getting on a roll on the wrong side of things of, just things sort of snowballed, and there wasn't a way for us, or we couldn't find a way. Sorry. We couldn't find a way of stopping that rot. But becomes a great opportunity to springboard and change how you do things. And that's where we got to. We wanted to make sure that we used it as a positive thing about how we train, what we do. And this is how the whole Mickey Arthur things come around, how... you only have to look at how the condition that the players are in now, and it's phenomenal, the transformation, just in a matter of months. And as I say, it'll be exciting to see where this group of lads go in the next few years. There's some serious talent there. You only have to look at, you know, the young lads like Benny Aitchison, Sam Connors with the ball. You know, these blokes, they're young lads that broke in and have taken county cricket by storm. And this is what people need to realise is that, yes, Derbyshire don't have the money to bring in, you know, the AB de Villiers, the Hashim Amlers, the, you know, these quality players that have played international cricket. But what we can provide is a place for people to have opportunity, develop the game. And yes, you know, for the last few years or whatever, there's not been county cricketers. But as I say, watch this space. I definitely see there being in the near future, there'll be some county cricketers that are turning into international cricketers, and I'm sure they'll do well when they do get there as well.
Well, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, Lewis. And you mentioned two names there, Ben Aitchison and Sam Connors, who we've had on the podcast. So clearly we've got some decent taste, according to you then, saying that they are incredibly bright prospects. They are. They're very, very good young cricketers, and we'll be watching their development very, very keenly here at CCCP over the next few years. And that's the thing with Derbyshire as well. Something to note, you've said about the lack of, I suppose, elite superstars. So they can't bring in AB de Villiers, Hashim Amla, Carlos Brathwaite, Glenn Maxwell, etc., etc. But the club is actually sustainable. That's something which people actually need to understand as well. You know, it's a well-run club. It's financially secure. That's why they don't bring in these marquee superstar names, but they don't need to. I'd much rather have a financially secure club, which again serves its community and gives players opportunities, than risking all of that future, all of that tradition, all of that history, for maybe a slight chance of bringing in a superstar name from an international team. So that is why Derbyshire operate the way in which they do, just for those who don't quite know that or didn't understand that beforehand. But in 2019, Lewis, it's mentioned, well, you mentioned it there actually, in the aforementioned passage. A brilliant year for Derbyshire County Cricket Club. A historic year, in fact, for the Falcons. Their first ever finals day. What can you recall from that remarkable campaign, from the group stages, the quarterfinal against Gloss, and of course finals day itself. How would you put 2019 into your own words?
A very fun year. Anyone that sort of has played cricket or have been involved in sport, whatever, fans, players, coaches, whatever it may be, you always see when a team's doing well, they have a formula. We found our formula in 2019 where, you know, we were arguably the pick of the teams in the group stages. We just went out there and played some incredible cricket. You know, we went toe-to-toe with the best in the country. We beat them. We beat them convincingly. And that was the pleasing thing, was the fact that we were able to do it. And especially that year, we had that formula where even if we got off to a slow start, we were able to claw it back, and we just pinned teams down, and we were just, didn't matter. One day, everyone would put the hand up along the way, and the whole 11 that played along the way, they put the hand up, they won games of cricket for us. And it was just such a brilliant atmosphere. Like, John Wright was, you know, he's a very, he's a brilliant man, and he was someone that brought a lot of belief and a lot of excitement. And, you know, we had Dom Cork's assistant coach, and these types of players that, past players that had been at the club, driving it forward. And yeah, we had such fun doing it. And as I say, we were one of the best clubs in the group stages. Quarter final, we played a brilliant game at Bristol. I had blue hair at the time, which was eventful, especially when it was running down my face while I was trying to carry out skills. And then we got to the finals day, and I think any other wicket, and I mean this wholeheartedly, not just because I'm biased, any other wicket than the wicket that we were on there, I think that we would have given Essex a hell of a game. We just came across Simon Harmer on a dust bowl, and yeah, we've seen it for years what he does to people when conditions are in his favour. It was just, we came across him, and I think he had something like 8 for 20-odd or something on finals day as a whole in both games. It was just ridiculous. No one could play him, and we just came on a wicket that suited him. And unfortunately, we came on the end of a pretty harsh battering in the end. But yeah, it was a proud season that the club thoroughly deserved. And hopefully, as I say, it's not going to be in the distant future that they'll be back there, and, you know, hopefully they'll go further, if not win it. And as I say, we know what we're building, and we know what we're trying to achieve, and that's the exciting thing.
It most certainly is. Who knows? We might see Mickey Arthur and his famously short shorts at Edgbaston on finals day sooner rather than later. We'll have to wait and see what county cricket has in store for us. But you mentioned there in 2019, and this is something which some people might actually not know, but throughout that year, you were doing some brilliant, brilliant charity fundraising, and the blue hair was part of it, wasn't it, for that quarter final. Lewis, if you could just detail it, because I want people to know about this. I feel like this hasn't been given enough attention, and it deserves to have that bit more recognition. First of all, where did the idea for the fundraising come from? And secondly, for those who aren't aware, what did the fundraising actually entail of as that season progressed? What kind of things did you get up to?
So yeah, it was something that I broke my foot in 2018. And it allowed me some time out of the game just to sort of, I suppose, think of things I can do outside of it, give me an opportunity to think. And I thought, it's something that I've always wanted to do since I mentioned earlier that I lost my best friend and things like that. And the difficulties that I've gone through since, mental health-wise, with, you know, the PCA have been phenomenal. They really, really have supported me. And, you know, I continue to do work for them now, just because of what an amazing job they've done for me personally. And they do for a number of other cricketers out there. But yeah, the idea came down when I broke my foot, and I just thought, what sort of wacky things can we do that can be interactive and gaining awareness for these sort of charities that I want to raise funds for, and be quite sort of fun and sort of different for me to participate in and carry out. And it, there was a few sleepless nights worried actually about what the public was going to choose. But basically what it was one challenge every month for 12 months, trying to raise money of, anyone that sort of wanted to bring in ideas and stuff like that. It all went into a thing, and then the best three would get picked by a little committee I had at Derbyshire. And they picked out of those three, it then went out to a public vote, and then the public voted which one they wanted me to carry out that month. So, I mean, there was challenges like we had a Top Gear one. I raced my sister back from London to Bolton. It was a Christmas theme. It went from something like it went from somewhere in London. I can't remember the road, but it was all Christmas themed. So the roads were Christmassy. So we ended up in like Rudolph Street in Bolton. I had to get public transport versus them in a car. So we tried to do a Top Gear one then. I had like a food challenge where I had to eat like dry Weetabix, ended up being Scotch Bonnet chilies. It was, it was some bizarre things that I had to eat. And it, I dare say I won't be eating a Scotch Bonnet chili again for the rest of my life. And then we had, it was a full beard. I had a full Viking beard at one stage, blue hair. I had to do a 10K in my full batting kit, which was less than comfortable. And these sort of things, they all went to the three charities that were close to me. Was the PCA Cricketers Trust, Mind and Cry. So Cry was to do with the passing of Tom Hardman at university. Mind was to do with, and the PCA Cricketers Trust was to do with the help that I've been given along my way, with the things that I've struggled through. So they were the three charities that were close to me, and I wanted to help them and raise a bit of funds and awareness and just sort of, I suppose, give me a different focus than just cricket all the time. It was something just gave me a purpose and something that I enjoyed doing, and something that I've continued to do sort of charity work along the way, and something that I'll carry on doing. As I say, it's something that gives you a lot of satisfaction, knowing that you're helping an organisation that has been as useful and as helpful to you, that will continue being helpful to other people. And, it's, for me, it just makes you feel absolutely superb at knowing that you're helping other people in the future.
Absolutely. And Lewis will be leaving the links to those three wonderful charities, Mind, the Professional Cricketers Trust, and Cardiac Risk in the Young. We'll be leaving the links to those in the description below. Listeners, if you are able to donate anything or just check them out, please feel free to do so. We have left the links to those in the podcast descriptions below. But as I said, that needed more recognition, because it was incredible, to be fair. I love the interactive element, actually. The fact that people got to choose the types of fundraising, I suppose. And the blue hair one, I suppose, in hindsight, could have gone horribly wrong, couldn't it, in a quarterfinal, if the dye was starting to come off and getting your face and your eyes. But it was an iconic look. I will give you that, Lewis. And to be fair, you won on the night as well. So that was a fantastic initiative. And you mentioned the Top Gear race. I have to ask, because I love Top Gear, who won? Was it public transport or the car?
It was the car, unfortunately. We had to do little challenges along the way. And I stumbled at a thing where I struggled at Manchester Station. I was at Manchester Piccadilly, where I had to raise so much money or something to move on from there. And unfortunately, that's what took me behind. I think I lost by about 7 minutes or something like this. But I was absolutely sprinting from the station to get to this road when I got out of Bolton. And I was, when I saw my sister in the car, I was devastated. But no, it was great fun. It was really good fun. I got some weird looks because I was dressed in a Rudolph onesie as well. So doing public transport in a Rudolph onesie, I got some peculiar looks. But no, it was all worth it. I loved it.
Most certainly was. And again, fantastic initiative. Really, really was. And Lewis, I suppose a follow-up to that, because I'm very interested to know, can we expect to see a similar thing in the future?
Potentially, yes. It's something that I've spoke to the Cricketers Trust about, perhaps trying to do something. I suppose that the key thing is trying not to make it too taxing for the body, especially coming out the back end of what I've just done now, is trying to give the body a bit of less traumatic times. But no, it's definitely something that we're going to look at. It's definitely something that, you know, hopefully we can bring to fruition and try and do something, again, fun and interactive. And as I say, if we can raise some money and, you know, do that for these great causes, then, you know, it'll, as I say, it just brings a lot of satisfaction to you, to what you're doing. And as I say, there's things to be said to helping people that really need it. And for me, I love doing it. Definitely helping people out that perhaps have struggled.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis, when you do it, let us know and we'll push it and we'll donate something towards it as well. And maybe vote for the, especially if you're playing Warwickshire, vote for the most inconvenient one. Maybe help out my Bears at the same time as well. Who knows? But no, honestly, mate, I know I'm going to keep on saying it. I sound like a broken record, but so much respect for that. And absolutely loved it at the time. Felt it need more recognition, more of a voice actually on today's podcast. And thanks for taking us through it, because it was brilliant. And fingers crossed for us as County fans, in particular the Derbyshire faithful, we get to see it. And who knows, maybe in the future, Lewis, get some of your teammates involved, you know, let's go more than, have all of the reindeer instead of just one.
I did try. The few of them joined in the 10K in the kit.
Who joined in?
So we had Harvey Hussain, Anuj Dahl. I feel like I'm being harsh if I miss someone out here. John T. Norris, who was our S&C at the time, he joined in. But yeah, a couple of lads decided that we'll only do a little bit. We're not going to do the full 10K. So John T. was my mainstay that was pushing me. So as I say, when you're doing a 10K and you're full pads and that, running up hills and all the rest of it, it took it out of you. And I dare say the box isn't that comfortable wearing.
No. Oh, goodness me. I hadn't even thought of that, to be fair. You went the whole hog then. I thought you just would have gone helmet, pads.
No, the challenge was wearing full batting kit, so I stuck with it.
Did you go for the chest guard?
I never wear a chest guard. Never worn one.
I've just exposed myself as a tail ender there, haven't I? Because I can't face the short ball.
A lot of people like wearing a chest guard. I've just never been able to get to grips with it.
Well, I suppose if you can play the short ball, there's no need for one, but yeah, when you've got a batting average of 11.5 in one of the lower divisions, Lewis, you need as much help as you can get, to be honest. Might as well wear a pillow underneath there as well. Make it even less painful at times. But talking of your teammates, I think that's actually quite a nice place to pick up our conversation surrounding the teammate segment. But first and foremost, we have actually got some Twitter questions from the wonderful Derbyshire faithful. So in terms of the first one, this is from Steve Mann, and Steve always provides us with some fantastic questions. But Steve's question involves one of your teammates and a former guest here at TCCP, a certain Tom Wood from Ticknell, Ticknell's finest, as you know him here on the podcast. Steve's question for you is, Lewis, are you jealous of Tom Wood's goat mug?
You know what?
I wish you had one.
I can't actually say I've seen it.
Have you not?
No, I can't say I've seen it. So I'm actually going to get onto Woody to send me a photo of it.
Oh, there we go.
So the answer to it, I can't actually say yes, I'm jealous of it, but I will send a message in after I've seen it and I'll let you know.
Fantastic. Steve, we will tell you. We will get the answer to that one. It's a TBC next to that one. But honestly, I've seen it. He put it up on Twitter the other day. It's quite a nice mug. I think it's... I'm pretty sure it's Tom after celebrating that century against Notts. I think that's when it was. But yeah, that's our first one from Steve. And then in terms of our second one, actually, it's from another Steve, Steve Pierce. And he asks, given the whole situation that you're going through with the rehab, with the two injuries, when are you set to return to Derbyshire in a first team environment? When have you kind of, you know, set your target to return to county cricket in 2022?
Good question. And it's something I'll learn probably a lot more on the 4th of March. That's when I next go back. I'm hoping it's not going to be, if I miss any cricket, I hope it's not a lot of cricket. Obviously, it'll be tapered, so I won't be bowling straight away. But I'm hoping it's certainly going to be in April, from what I've heard and what I've been told. Obviously, things change, but I'm hoping it's, I'm not going to miss any cricket. If I do, it, hopefully it's not too much at all.
Good answer. And fingers crossed, Lewis, it isn't too much, if any, of course, this season. We want to see you back out on the field because last year, Derbyshire were just plagued by injury. It wasn't just yourself. I mean, Wayne was out for a long time, wasn't he? With, was it a calf injury as well?
Wayne tore his hamstring.
That's what it was.
Tore his hamstring. Yoz had a broken rib and a side strain, so he was out of the 2020 stuff. Obviously, Billy Stanlake, he went down. We've had a number of Dustin Melton, Mike Cohen. We had a whole list of them. I think at one stage we only had 9 fit players, which, you know, remarkable. But again, people don't actually fully understand that how much injuries that we had last year. And admittedly, you still got to go out there and perform, and it just makes things a bit harder when all your players are either on the physio bed or, you know, unfortunately, or worse. And hopefully last year was a one-off. And as I say, the lads have worked incredibly hard this winter to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, I imagine it will be, because I say this not from experience of having had the injuries or being part of the squad, but Warwickshire had a very similar situation in 2019. The fact is, we had to get the likes of Toby Lester, Ben Mike, we had to get Fidel Edwards in on loan as well, had to bring in James Wainman, we brought in Whiteman as well. We brought in 5 players, because at some point we were like 16 players down. It was absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, that was a mitigating circumstance for Derbyshire last year, and fingers crossed, Derbyshire fans, that will not happen this year. Talking of those teammates though, so we mentioned the likes of Dustin Melton, we mentioned the likes of Wayne Madsen. Lewis, basically, this is the opportunity for you to, you know, get your own back on your teammates in this segment. We've only got 5 questions. It is a little bit of a shorter segment compared to usual. But Lewis Rees, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I'm ready.
Fantastic. We get off to a brilliant start here with a classic here at TCCP. Who is the teacher's pet, Lewis, at Derbyshire? Who is always hanging around the coaches, per se?
This is the easiest question you'll ever ask. It's definitely Wayne Madsen. 100% Wayne Madsen.
Fair enough. Is he constantly around the coaches? Does he allow others to get involved and have some coaching? Or
no, he's just the teacher's pet. Everything he does, you know, the boy's an absolute genius, but he's always the teacher's pet, right? To the extent that, you know, you'll never, ever hear him say a foul word. It's always flip or shoot or something like that. He's a teacher's pet. Teacher's pet. Great, great man. Great man, but a teacher's pet.
Well, he's a fantastic cricketer, isn't he? He's just been a stalwart for Derbyshire over the years. And yeah, that must be quite interesting. Obviously, with the South African accent, it'd be more flip and shoot.
Absolutely.
There we go. We'll have to get Wayne on the podcast one day. Wayne, if you're listening, right, we'll get you on. We'll get you on, and you can get your own back on, Lewis, for calling you the teacher's pet as well. But moving
on. I'm sure.
He will. Oh, we always do on the podcast. As soon as someone's name gets mentioned, immediately there's a payback. So that will happen at some point, Lewis. I don't know when, but it will at some point in 2022. In terms of the next question, you are the first cricketer. Bear in mind, we're 160 episodes in to this podcast to get this teammate's question. So we're breaking completely new ground here on TCCP tonight. Who has the strangest pre-game ritual at Derbyshire? Does anyone really have something quite strange, something quite peculiar per se, that they do to get them ready before a match starts?
I'd probably say Lewis. So Lewis juggles, and I've never seen it before. So he gets 3 balls out of the bag and he juggles.
Cricket
and you'll
balls.
See him. Yeah, well, there can be any sort of balls. He just juggles. And it's something that you'll see. So in a red ball game, he could get up, you know, batting sometimes you're waiting hours to bat, but you'll see him every so often. He'll just get out of his chair, he'll start walking around, juggling. Yeah, it's something I've never seen before. But he's passed it on to Mikey Cohen as well. So between the two little South African lads, I say little, they won't enjoy me for saying that. But yeah, they enjoy a juggle, which I've never seen before.
I'm going to be honest, I wasn't expecting that. When you mention about cricket balls, I'm not sure if you've seen Glenn Phillips. Have you seen his visualisation method?
No, I haven't.
Right. Well, for anyone who wants to watch it, I think you'll probably be able to find it on YouTube or Facebook or somewhere. But what he does before a game, he grabs a cricket ball, he puts it close to his face, and then he extends the arm fully out. He just keeps on doing this constantly to kind of get his eye in. But it must work because, you know, he's been absolutely tearing up cricket across the world for New Zealand, Jamaica, Gloucestershire, last year in the Blast as well. I've always found that quite a unique kind of style, but juggling might actually have topped that. I wasn't expecting that answer at all, but there we go. Each their own. Elias and Mikey Cohen. Interesting. Might have to get them performing that on the podcast. That'll be interesting. See if they can actually juggle. That'll be the next question. But moving on to our third one. Lewis, you're going to have to throw someone, at least someone, potentially two or three, under the metaphorical bus, shall we say. Okay. Who are the best and worst dressed at Derbyshire County Cricket Club? Who has got a questionable sense of fashion?
Ooh, best and worst. Tell you what, that's a tough question, that. Best and worst. To be fair, I'm going to go with, as the best dressed, I'm probably going to go Anuj Dal. For the fact that he's always, he always looks after himself. He's, you know, I think he has a haircut every week or every 2 weeks. He's always looking prim and proper. So I'm going to give it Nudge, as much as I'm sure any lads that watch this are going to be on to me going, oh, I'm not the best dressed. And the worst dressed. Oh, he's not going to like me for this. But I'm going to go Matty McKiernan.
That's interesting. We haven't had Matty's name on the podcast yet. We usually get Dustin Melton or Mikey Cohen.
Yeah, I'm going to go Matty McKiernan. And he's one of my great mates. But he always looks like a tourist abroad. So
great description.
And again, he'll hate me for it. But yeah, sorry, mate. I'm going to chuck you under the bus.
There we go. Hey, you got to be honest. You have to be honest in this segment. The integrity is the most important part. That's interesting. I'll tell you what, Mikey and Dusty will thank you for that because their names have cropped up constantly on that for some reason. In particular, I think for the wearing of sandals and socks. I think that's been...
I think that's a fast bowlers thing. There's a lot of sandals and socks, which I've never got my head round.
No. I mean, I don't wear sandals at all, to be fair, so I can't really comment on that, but... Yeah, always a very, very strange combination. Moving on to our penultimate one then. Oh, I think I know this is going to be straight off the bat. It'll be interesting to see if you say someone different, Lewis. Who is the dressing room joker? Who is always pulling a practical joke on the players?
Alex Hughes.
Yes, yeah.
Alex Hughes, hands down, he's someone that you just... He's the type of person you want in the dressing room. He just rallies the lads and... Yeah, he usually gets a laugh out of a few people. So, yeah, Alex Hughes.
No surprises there at all. Always gets the crown on that one. Would love to get him on the podcast one day. Yozza, if you're listening, get on the Counts Cricket podcast. That'd be very, very entertaining for us. And the final one. Oh, this might be interesting at Derbyshire. Right, this is our classic, the pièce de résistance at the Counts Cricket podcast. Who's the most likely in the Derbyshire dressing room to appear on Love Island?
I'm going to go with Benny Aitchison. I'm going to go with him. Yeah. I think he's the sort of character that would go in and enjoy that environment. I don't think there's many characters that would go in there and perhaps enjoy that environment, but he's definitely one that I think would hold his own, I'll say. And yeah, Benny Aitchison. I can't... Has to be a fast bowler though, doesn't it? It always has to be. It's that type of... they've got that sort of characteristics that enjoy that sort of environment. So yeah, Benny Aitchison.
There we go then. Ben Aitchison, we'll have to wait and see if he does appear. Fingers crossed, not anytime soon, obviously, because you're only playing for Derbyshire. I think it takes place midway through the season, so that wouldn't be ideal if Ben went AWOL. So where is it? Is it Ibiza?
It's, I don't know, it's Spain, I think. Is it Spain or... I can't remember that. I watch it as well. I have to say, I do watch it. You know, as not as a great thing it is, it does hook you in and it makes you want to watch it. But yeah, it's definitely a nice little talking point. Anyway, hopefully when you're batting and you're scoring a lot of runs, you can sit there and you can talk about a bit of Love Island.
That'd be interesting, you know. You know, with the NBA and NFL, they have, I think they call it FX. They put like a little mic on the bench so you can listen to what the players are talking about. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? One of the conversations at Derbyshire just, oh, did you watch Love Island last night? Yeah.
Yeah, that's... unfortunately, there's a few Love Island watchers that have left in recent years. So this conversation has got smaller, I must admit. It has got smaller over the last few years.
Lewis, you'll have to bring it back with a vengeance in 2022. This podcast will be the catalyst. And when the Derbyshire players start complaining, point them in my direction. You know,
yeah,
why.
We'll get a Love Island podcast.
Oh, goodness me. You wouldn't see me on that anytime soon. Crikey, I'll stick to county cricket for the time being. That's what I'm good at. But Lewis, I mean, that's pretty much it for the teammate segment. Just one final question before we wrap up what has been a fascinating and thoroughly entertaining episode of TCCP. And of course, it relates to 2022. We're not that far away at all. At the time of recording this towards the end of February, we're around about 40-odd days away from the start of the county season. So, Lewis, what are your kind of aspirations? What are your ambitions ahead of this season? What would you like to achieve from both the personal and a team perspective heading into 2022?
So, from a collective point of view, I want to win a trophy. And I'm sure, as you mentioned before, a lot of people sort of count us out. But by doing that, it helps you out. But there's a few, you know, there's not many people that people look at in the 100 and stuff. So one day stuff is a massive opportunity. You know, hopefully keeping most of your side together. So, yeah, winning a trophy. Obviously, I think red ball stuff, to be a team that people don't like playing against. That's a goal for this year. And then personal note, I know that I've got a few points to prove in terms of coming back to fitness and that sort of stuff. So I'm going to push myself for probably hopefully the biggest year that I've had so far, which is a big statement, but I'm hoping it's going to be my biggest year so far with both bat and then when I have got the chance to bowl with the ball. Hopefully can get either picked up in the auction for the 100 or get myself in through the wild cards or stuff like that. It's something that, you know, I feel that my white ball cricket over recent years has been really good. So it's just, as I say, mine is just every game I'm going to keep hammering down the door. Selections. I've still got England aspirations, and it's something that I'll be, you know, hopefully this year. You know, all you have to do is put yourself in the shop window by scoring the way it runs, and that's what I'm going to be doing. Especially the way the test side is at the minute, with people perhaps not nailing down spots and things like that, becomes opportunities, and that's something that I always have in my head as driving force. And it's something that's why I work so hard at my game is that I know that, you know, these opportunities can come out of nowhere. So it's something that I'll be definitely pushing for.
Well, Lewis, it goes without saying, but myself and everyone here at the County Cricket Podcast are wishing both yourself and Derbyshire all the very best of luck heading into this season. Obviously, some exciting times at the Ancora Ground with Mickey Arthur. Can't wait to see his impact on the side. You've got two excellent overseas players with the likes of Shan Masood and Sarangal Akmal joining Dustin Melton as your contingent for this season. It'll be interesting to see how those guys perform as well. And obviously, it'll be good to see you back because we missed you throughout the majority of 2021. So obviously, it'll be fantastic to see you back out on the field, and fingers crossed, we'll see at some point those charity fundraisers, we'll see those grace the hallowed turf of the county ground in Derby at some point in the future. But Lewis, I mean, that is pretty much it for tonight's episode of TCCP. Before we say our final goodbyes for the recording, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, as I say, anyone that wants to get in touch about any charity stuff, you know, feel free to drop me a message on whether it's Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be. You know, these sort of things I'm happy to sort of respond to and talk through. So, but yeah, as I say, I've always been someone, if someone needs any help or anything with anything at all, just speak up. And as I say, Mark, drop a message and I'm happy to try and help or point them in a direction that can they can receive help. So, yeah, that's pretty much about it. Just, you know, follow me on Instagram or Twitter or whatever it may be. And as I say, it's a communication line that's always going to be open. But yeah, as I say, cricket community, it's had a testing time over the last 24 months. So, you know, if you can pull that together and we get everyone together, then, you know, that's as you say, cricket connoisseurs or, you know, cricket fans, it's the least we can do. And I think now more than ever, cricket needs the people within it to pull together and show that actually this is a sport for everyone, and it's a sport no matter what you're going through, that, you know, people are here to help you. And, you know, that's what I think the going forward, that especially this year more than ever, it's massively important.
Honestly, Lewis, I couldn't put that any better myself. That is a fantastic way to wrap up what's been a fascinating episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. Obviously, echo every single one of those sentiments. It is a game for everyone. It's a game where people should feel included. And it's a great game as well. It's the best sport ever invented. And yes, I am very biased. I'm aware of that, listeners, as the host of the Counter Cricket Podcast and the self-anointed cricket connoisseur. But yeah, there's nothing like the great game of cricket. And honestly, I cannot wait for the 2022 season to start and everything gets underway all over again. But that is basically it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.